natural thing, and it's like very, very healthy. And it's beautiful. Like, you connect, like, you're out there looking at the mountains all around, and nature, like Tweety birds flying by while you're bathing. You're not sealed off in some little fiberglass cubicle.
G'day and welcome. This is the Hunting Republic podcast. The podcast where we discuss all things hunting and outdoors. So if you love hunting, camping, fishing, hiking, bushwalking, full driving, or just being in the outdoors, then we reckon you've come to the right place. My name is Luke, I will be your host, and I can't wait to have you along for the journey. So please enjoy this edition of the Hunting Republic podcast. G'day team, and welcome to another episode of the Hunting Republic podcast. It has been a hot minute, hasn't it? Life has been stupid busy, stupid crazy, and it has been a bit of a struggle to find the time to sit down and have some yarns and record some more episodes for people. But this thing I do here is about enjoying it and not making it a chore. And if it rolls out the way it rolls out and it's a few months or whatever between episodes, then so be it. I just want to enjoy chatting with people, talking and making content that I don't feel burdened to have to put out every week or every fortnight. So it is what it is. Guys, today we have a really cool episode. We're going to have a chat with Harrison, Mad Harry from Far Ahead Bow Hunting. He runs a business down on the Sunshine Coast. And I came across Far Ahead Bowhunting a number of months ago now on social media and have been following their stuff quite keenly since then. And they're doing some really good things in the space of bow hunting and hunter education. More recently, the guys had an article published in a local newspaper about their business. And I noted that there was some very colourful dialogue that came with the commentary on the social media around that article. And no doubt if you've been around hunting for a little while, you can imagine for yourself the type of commentary that there was, including the fors and againsts for the awesome thing that Harry's doing down at Far Ahead Bow Hunting. So today we sit down, we have a yarn, we talk about all things from running the business, to starting out, to favourite bow hunting memories, to what gear we're running and what we're looking to for the future, and goals and ideals and things like that. So I hope you enjoy the episode. I hope that you do jump on Far Ahead Bow Hunting socials. Faraheadbowhunting.com is the website. And if you enjoy this episode, please get in contact with Harrison, give them some support, follow their socials, give them a like, give them a follow. And the same if you like this episode, please share it around. Let's get behind a guy who's making a go of a small business and doing great things for the pastime of hunting and for the passion of hunting. That is what we're all about on the Hunting Republic podcast. So please enjoy this episode. All right, g'day team. Welcome back to another episode of the Hunting Republic podcast. Joining me today, I have Harrison. Now, Harrison, do you prefer Harrison or Harry, or what do you go by, mate?
Either's fine. Most people do call me Harry. Mates.
Yep.
Yeah.
So this is our first actual conversation. You know, obviously to arrange this and whatnot, we've been chatting, you know, via Messenger, but our first actual conversation. So I'm a first timer here along with the listeners. I've got no idea really about you. I know a little bit about your business and that, which we'll get into later. But mate, tell us a bit about yourself and your background and hunting escapades and things like that.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm a husband to Laura, a father to three beautiful kids, Alia, Tanner, and Sadie. And I guess the main reason I got into bow hunting was to source quality meat to provide for myself and my family, mainly for myself at first, as I went through a bit of a rough patch there with a major health concern, and just sourcing good quality food that was clean and was raised with a good sort of environment, really helped me get fix my health issues. I had a prolapsed L5-S1 disc in my lower back.
Crikey, yeah.
Yeah, and I couldn't walk most days. I was blacking out with pain. And, it sort of made me sit there for a while and sort of contemplate on my life and what I was doing and how I was treating myself.
Yep.
So, and just through my own findings and people that I met, healing that injury made me sort of, just want to source better quality food. And I've never shot, I have now, I've shot guns now, but prior to that I had no experience with rifles. I didn't really have any opportunities to go out and sort of shoot with a rifle. So I thought, why not pick up a bow and start that way? I didn't realize how hard it was going to be, to be honest. it took much longer than I thought it was going to be to start providing my own meat.
Yep.
Let's say that. Learning of all the other parts about bow hunting and hunting in general and why we do it over the years has just sort of grown my love for it. Hey,
fantastic.
Getting out there and the conservation side, meeting like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty awesome that the blokes that I've had come in here and that I sort of stay in touch with, and they're in here on a frequent basis into Firehead bow hunting.
How long ago did you decide to get into it, or did I miss that?
No,
that's all right.
So I started about 4 years ago.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, so 4 years ago, and that injury that I had was about 4 years ago as well.
Yep.
That
was an injury thing, was it? As in, you actually hurt yourself doing something, or?
Yeah. So it was actually a heavy deadlift, a 1 hour deadlift.
Yep.
That was the final straw that sort of blew my back out.
Yep.
And it just sort of gradually got worse.
Yep.
Over a few weeks to a point where I could hardly even walk.
Jeez.
Yeah. And I was seeing a few different specialists, and I had a cortisone shot one afternoon, which did work until the next morning, and then the pain was completely back.
Yep.
And so I actually went and seen a Czech practitioner, which is a corrective holistic exercise kinesiology practitioner.
Yep.
And they do like a full body assessment of all the muscles, lifestyle, what you're eating. And they got me on a parasite and antifungal cleanse.
All right.
And literally within 3 days of doing a broth fast, about 90% of the pain subsided.
Get out of town, eh?
Yeah, just from doing a bloody broth fast.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, I know that was from my lower abdominal wall was completely switched off.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no muscles down there holding my core together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess when that happens, the other muscles around the pelvis need to stabilize your system.
Mm-hmm.
So my hamstrings were fucking so tight.
Mm.
Which was creating a flat back
mm-hmm.
over many years, which was pushing that disc
yep.
Out the back. And, that 1RM deadlift just was a catalyst of it, and just completely just blew it out.
Mm. And yeah. if like, do you, like, I mean, you've probably, I assume, as part of your overall approach to it, you've done rehab exercises and stuff like that. Do you lift at all anymore?
Yeah. So I actually studied the Czech system as well, mm-hmm. just for myself, and I've taken a few clients on with that too. But yeah, I'm still lifting. I work mainly with my tonic system, the stabilizer muscles.
Mm-hmm.
I find that if I do too much sort of heavy strength workout, I just get way too tight and sort of it's too much for me.
Yep.
So a lot of that strength, endurance, your static holds, stuff like that.
Yep.
But yeah, I'll work out a few times a week.
Yeah, nice.
With my wife most times. And that really helps, just keeping everything in check. A little bit of stretching, rolling out on the balls.
Yep.
Just feeling what muscles are tight in my body now.
Yep. Or your activation points and release points and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I think I heard on a podcast that you've done some physiology and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Physical education teacher, was
it? Yeah, science and phys ed teacher for 10 years. So hence my interest. And we are probably a little bit off the topic of bow hunting, but that's okay. We talk about all sorts of shit here. You know, like I like going down rabbit holes, especially with things that interest me. And yeah, mate, 10 years as a science phys ed teacher and a background in the studying, you know, all your biomechanics and physiology and that sort of thing. So strength and conditioning and whatnot. So, yeah, it definitely intrigues me, mechanisms of injury and processes of healing and rehab and that sort of stuff. So, I mean, the other question I've got is, A, did you get the lift up and what was your PB there?
Yeah, well, I actually didn't get the lift up.
Oh, no.
This was six. It was sort of like a CrossFit gym.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there for about 6 months.
Yep.
And I was just going flat chat. Like at the start, I started like 2-3 days a week, and then I was going like 5-6 days a week every morning.
Yep.
And I think a couple of 2 or 3 months in, I lifted about 140 kilos.
Nice.
And then 6 months comes along. I felt way stronger, obviously. But I just wasn't losing any weight.
Yep.
And I just wanted to look physically better.
Yep.
So I did a calorie deficit challenge for like a month. I lost 7 kilos within that month. But my body was just calling out for fucking nutrients and energy. And
yeah, absolutely.
So I did that lift and I was like, yep, I'm gonna smash this 1RM. And I was just slowly loading it up, got up to about 130 and just started lifting. I got halfway up and I just started sort of half blanking out. So I just dropped the weight and just, yeah, went a bit starry.
Yep.
So I sort of just took a minute and then I was like, all right, no, I'm good. And then I just left it at that because I was like, oh, I'm just feeling like shit. So, and then the next morning I sort of started getting a bit of sciatic pain down that right-hand side.
Yep.
And then I sort of stopped doing as much sort of physical active, like strength work. And I was sort of doing movements which wasn't helping it, like Jefferson curls and forward bending, which was sort of opening up that disc in that lower back. So I was sort of doing, not understanding and just doing the wrong movements for it. And it just got worse and worse. And yeah, started seeing some my therapist, chiros, stuff like that. And yeah, it just kept getting worse. So I think the next thing was a discectomy.
Yep.
And I didn't really want that. Like it just didn't feel right to have my back operated on just because all the things that couldn't.
And I'm just going to throw it out there. You're not exactly of an age where you sort of really want to have that, is it? You know, like
Yeah.
At the stage of life you're at where, you know, you've got young kids and that, you'd prefer to try and rehab things before surgery where you can, because often, you know, surgery results in restrictions and other bits and pieces for the rest of your life, especially with fused backs and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I guess once that disc is fused, it's just going to spread to the next one. So, man, it took, like I said, it was 3 days of a broth fast, which obviously reduced all the inflammation and started eating better. But that whole rehab process took a good couple of years and maybe even closer to 3 years to get fully out of pain without that little bit of sciatic down my right-hand side.
Yep. And so that's what sort of got you onto looking at, like you said before, the sort of sourcing your own meat and the interest in hunting, or was there a bit of inkling in hunting in that beforehand?
I've always grown up, like my granddad hunted rabbits down in Victoria.
Yep.
They had a farm and stuff, but my dad moved up here and had us kids up in Queensland, and my dad was never really into the hunting sort of scene.
Yep.
So I never had anyone to go hunting with, but we lived just out of town. So I was always out bush with my mates and making stuff and slingshots and things like that. So never sort of grew up hunting, but mm-hmm. always had that urge to go out and do it.
Yep.
I bought a bow and then told my mate Mickey Farr about it, and he did a bit of archery when he was younger, and he wanted to do it for a while, so he jumped on it as well. But it's only been the last couple of years that I've really started filling our freezer full of meat. Hey,
it took
years, hey, to even sort of get that transition happening.
Yep.
Getting access to properties and finding decent animals that we can eat, because even as you would know, like wild animals are sometimes they're not healthy themselves if they're living near like industrial farming and stuff like that.
Yeah, and even you know what different animals in different areas and what they eat, you know, particularly with pigs and that, you know. So being aware of their dietary habits in the area that you're hunting is pretty important when it comes to consideration of eating them, you know. So
for sure.
And that's something that you know, as I suppose people hunt in various places or travel, or you know, like guys don't necessarily, or it's not common to jump into hunting and, you know, you've been in hunting for 3 months and all of a sudden you're traveling all over the state or the country. You know, usually you sort of hunt more locally or where you have access before, you know, for a while before you start to venture further abroad and look at what different dietary habits and stuff that's available in different areas for the game to consume as part of your consideration. As to that side of things. So I didn't mean to skip past it at all before. I was just intrigued by your health journey, I suppose. But yeah, tell us about your business, mate. Far Ahead Bow Hunting.
Yeah, Far Ahead. I've had Far Ahead running now for would be close to 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the main reason I started it was because when I first started my bow hunting, there was nowhere really to go and learn it properly.
Yep.
There's a few archery stores and stuff like that, and but it was hard to find someone that, you know, when you can tell someone's just got like a genuine passion for it.
Absolutely.
And they live and breathe it.
Yep.
And they can, they can just sort of show you exactly what you need at where you're at.
Mm.
Set up your bow properly, get it all tuned in, help you with your shot process and just these little tweaks and hacks that you can have to improve your stability, so you're more confident with shooting an animal. I guess it's just sharing a a lot of what I've learned over the years, and finding more like-minded sort of guys to come in here and share it with and go hunting with. And yeah, I've met some awesome people through here. I've got a couple of good mates that I go hunting with a fair bit that I met a year and a half ago, and we're pretty good mates now. Hey,
yeah, nice.
Yeah.
So you're down at the sunny coast, which I say down because from Bundy where I am, a couple of years down the road. A beautiful Moffat Beach. Yeah.
Yeah, Moffat Beach on the sunny coast.
Yep.
Just on the southern end of the coast here. So we've got a 23-metre indoor range.
Beautiful.
Which we use mainly for the coaching purposes and our bow hunting course that we do.
Tell us about that.
The bow hunting course. We're just halfway through our second one now. This week it's every Friday from 2:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
For a few hours. And we go through, I've sectioned it to sort of like three modules. So we start off with all about the bow.
Mm-hmm.
We run through the bow, the basics of tuning, arrow flights, making up the arrows, broadheads, all that just simplified down. So, because most of the guys that I get in here are fresh into bow hunting. So, just really making it simple for them to sort of understand the concepts.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's the first part, all about the bow. And then we go out to the range and we do all about yourself, which is your draw,
mm-hmm.
your shot process, releasing the arrow, a little bit of sort of muscle imbalances, just mm-hmm. releasing your shoulders and strengthening what muscles that need that.
Yep.
And then we move into the all about the animal, which is the butchering. Mm-hmm. So we do the skinning process, breaking down a few different cuts of meat, sausages, and this course we're actually heading down to Venture Hunting.
Oh, fantastic.
Set up with the boys down at Venture Hunting for us to all go down there, and that way, because I just have a very small sort of shop front.
Yep.
With my just we sell hunting and target arrows. The ones that I've got, a few selection of broadheads, the Terra Firma and Cayugas, and then just a few basic sort of like bow bags and targets and stuff.
But, yeah, nice.
Just to give the boys a bit more of an understanding of what selection of hunting gear there is, we're going to head down there. I've got we've done up a bit of a backpack checklist for them.
Yeah,
so
perfect.
They can tick off their checklist every time they go out and make sure they've got everything in their backpack, which I use. Not that I say that I don't use it every single hunt, but it's in there.
That's it. Better have it, not need it, and need it, not have it.
Exactly. So, the boys, they get a discount code and head down there and go have some fun, meet the boys down at Venture Hunting.
Yeah, they're good lads. I've been chatting with Taylor a little bit the last couple of weeks, actually. They stock our Brackenware stuff, so they're getting a bit low, and we've got to get them some more. So,
that's good to hear.
We're a bit low down here. We're a bit low here too. So, sort of managing that and sort of trying to get him stocked up again before Christmas as best we can. But busy. Lots of balls in the air at the moment. Look, I have to admit, I haven't been to their new store yet, which I'm really, really, you know, keen to get down to. But I'll probably have to wait till the Chrissy holidays roll around in a little while's time, and my wife's finished work for the year, and the girls are on holiday, so it might make it a bit easier to get down. But that package sounds really bloody good for newbies into the sport. You know, it sounds like you got some really good points covered off there. Did you get? You said you're into your second course now, so obviously you've run some guys through. You know, and you know you're building on some feedback from the first course. What sort of things did you learn out of doing the first course and then incorporate?
Yeah, for sure. This time around, I've done like a PowerPoint presentation or a Canva presentation and put images with all my sort of protocols that I wrote down for the first one and put it into that so I can have a slideshow up on the screen and have a PDF that all the boys can take home, all women as well.
Beautiful.
So they have something to take home as well and refer back to, because obviously when you're in here, you can – shit just goes over your head, there's so much to take in. So if they've got something to go back home with and be like, oh, what was this?
Yep.
I remember it, but I don't. So they can go back to that PDF and look in it and be like, oh, that's right. And they keep that for lifetime. And I guess over the courses that I will continue doing, I'll just keep putting more and more into that. And whoever's done the course in the past, I'll just send them the updated PDF.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And electronic version.
Electronic. Yeah.
Yep. Perfect.
Yeah.
And have you had much interest from ladies?
So the first course I had Jen in here, she's been in here for a fair while learning. She did the 8 weeks with us, the 8 week course. And then just recently, over the last couple of months, I've had a lot of people wanting to jump on next year.
Nice.
And I think there was another 3 ladies that reached out.
Yeah, that's
awesome.
That
wanted to do it.
Yep.
And even a few, like, wives of husbands are sort of seeing what's happening, and they're sort of reaching out for their husbands, like, oh, my husband sort of loves the hunting. He wants to get into it. How do I book in and get him down there?
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Which, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, 100%, because, I've discussed it with different people over the years, obviously, and more recently on a couple other podcasts that some of my mates host, but the discussion about hunting in the wider community and either, you know, different people's opinions on encouraging either more people into hunting and or, you know, because one of the, as you mentioned on before, one of the biggest challenges for us in Queensland is that we only have private land hunting, and gaining access can be extremely difficult, and even to the point where, you know, some people just get frustrated and stop trying and sort of give up on that, you know, attempt to bow hunt, and it sort of leaves a sour taste in their mouth, I suppose, unfortunately. But also the discussion around, you know, talking to those people who are sort of sitting on the fence. They don't necessarily want to hunt, but they're not necessarily anti-hunting either. And that discussion in the wider community with those people, and talking about what we do and the, you know, all the stuff that you've just mentioned about your course and the elements that we cover off on and that sort of thing, to, you know, to generalize grossly, you would say, obviously, you know, stereotypically males have a far more, typically far more interested. We see them, you know, vastly more represented, and that's going back thousands of years, I suppose, to more generic, typical, traditional, stereotypical roles that existed back in the day. But it's also interesting because of that opportunity and access now that is there with courses like you're running for, you know, mums and girlfriends and wives and that to be able to jump in and have a look as well, but then also say to their hubbies, hey, I've seen this. Have you seen it or whatever? You know, that's good. Like it's a different proactiveness within the community, a different acknowledgement of what we're doing. To have you know, partners encouraging hubbies and stuff to have a look at it, you know, that's really cool.
Totally, yeah. And one thing that just popped in my mind then, I've got another bloke that did that course. His daughter was coming in doing some student coaching, and she's 13, and they just went on their first hunt a few months ago down to a property.
Yep.
So he took his daughter out hunting.
Yep.
For the first time. So I guess if this wasn't here, then I'm not too sure if that could have or would have happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So it's pretty special. And like, yeah, what you were saying with getting that, I guess that community feedback, I had an article in the Sunshine Coast Daily not too long ago.
I'm laughing, people, because that's how I came to think that I should get this bloke on and have a good chat to him, because it's an interesting conversation, and we're about to dive into it. So strap in. Sorry, yeah, mate. Keep going.
I actually haven't read the full article because you need to
subscribe.
I've seen it on Facebook. You got to subscribe.
Yep.
I know it's in the. I think it's the one of the newspapers down at the news agency, but I think I missed it to go grab it. I'm sure I'll get it from someone one day. So it popped up on Facebook. The chick that interviewed me though, the journalist, was awesome. She's all about it. She's actually keen to come down.
I was about to ask
and,
that.
And learn it for herself.
Fantastic.
She's like, when I was young, I used to make my own bows.
Wow.
Out of sticks and stuff.
Yep.
And she said that she's still got one of them that she made. And she's like, I'd be really keen to come down. And
it's one of the most awesome things, isn't it? In that, sorry to cut you off, mate, but you know, like you go back to when we were all running around in the backyard as kids or playing at our mates' places or whatever. And who didn't make a gun out of a stick? Who didn't make a bow out of a stick? Who didn't make a spear out of a stick? You know what I mean? Like, and that's kudos to the versatility of sticks, I suppose. But you know what I mean? Like, it just speaks to, and something I've mentioned and you know, I've got a passion about is our cultural heritage at hunting. You know, now my family ancestry is German, Welsh and English, you know, but this time last year was traveling overseas, Canada, America, Europe, and I through the help of one of my cousins, I was able to go and visit the village in Germany where my 8th great grandfather came from. And, you know, that was a very grounding thing for me, because that lineage of my history in Australia obviously stops not that far into the past. But to be able to go back 8-9 generations and visit where my ancestors came from brings me back to thinking, well, life back then was so primal and basic that everybody had to take the benefits from hunting or they wouldn't survive. Mm-hmm. And it literally doesn't matter what background you come from or where you come from, that is an arguable fact. You would not be here if your ancestors didn't hunt. And that cultural heritage exists in everybody. And it's something that, you know, only a matter of 12, maybe 18 months ago now that Ben Sellerus said, posted on Facebook, that made me really stop and think about that. And that, you know, really drives an innate passion in me and it emphasizes the importance on what it is that, you know, things like you're doing with your business to encourage people into it and to encourage that exposure of the pastime and of the activity to get in and embrace what this person has said to you. Hey, I'm a journalist, I'm writing this article, but guess what? You know, I want to come along and I'm super keen to have a go at this because I used to make bows with sticks when I was in my backyard. You know, that just throws all the way back to ancestors and ancestors worth of cultural heritage, you know?
Yeah, man, for sure. And, yeah, when you're saying like everyone was involved with that hunting. Like, obviously there was a very few that went out and hunted, but when the meat was brought back, that whole village contributed to making the food, setting it up, tables, and yeah, everyone was in it.
Yeah,
and appreciated it. Yeah.
Sorry, man. Back to the article.
Yeah. So, Facebook post. I saw it. I only looked at it a couple of times. The headline, do you remember what the headline was? Is it?
So the headline on the image, I've got it up. I'm looking at it now. It says, so there's a photo there, yourself holding your bow in your shooting lane with some stuff in the background there. And they've written on it, why I hunt for meat. Sorry, why I hunt for my meat and how I make a living from it. And then the caption that they have written with the article is, a Sunshine Coast bow hunting enthusiast has revealed a new addition to his facility and says he offers a safe space for others to hone their skills.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that Yeah, my wife was like, oh, you know, you get a lot of feedback from people commenting on those articles and the shares on Facebook.
Yeah.
And after a few days, my wife was like, oh, have you been reading the comments? I was like, no, I haven't. I don't know if I really want to, look at it.
Yeah.
But I did. I scrolled through it and, 95% of it was people encouraging.
Absolutely, it was, yeah.
What we were doing.
Yep.
And there was two or three people, that you, as there always is, but which it really helped me reinforce, it's exactly, everyone loves it. It's ingrained in us for thousands of years. We've done it for such a long time, and yeah, we've just slowly lost that.
Yep.
Over the last couple of hundred years.
Yep. That was something I was thinking about this morning, thinking, oh, well, we're going to chat soon or whatever else, and thinking it's a really intriguing notion when you look at something that was once literally the linchpin of our survival that then became something that is realistically only done by a small minority.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, how does something that's so mainstream that literally if you didn't know people who did this, you would probably not survive, and or, at some point you'd be going to find people who could do this for you and you would help them, yes, and then benefit from it.
Yeah.
But now, yeah, it has, over the years, has dwindled from mainstream consciousness to, I go to Woolies to get my meat, and it doesn't matter. So I don't do it. I don't care. I don't like it or whatever. It's just that.
Yeah, I don't need to do it anymore. Need to do it.
Yeah, it's a bizarre phenomenon.
But we sort of do, because at the same time, it's how we regenerate ourselves in our body to heal.
That's right.
So it's a bit of a no-brainer, but I guess if you're not open to anything and have a good conversation and just be okay with, yeah, life in general, and not have beliefs that can sort of stunt you and get emotionally attached to a few things, then life's good, hey.
Be open-minded, but not so open-minded that your brain's fall out, eh?
yeah, true that.
That's what I say. And so, the comments are up there. Like you said, a large majority of people commenting are actually very supportive. That's got to be, that's got to give you a bit of a pump as far as a business is concerned and how you feel about running it and what you're doing.
100%. Yeah, even some people like, oh, I'm a vegan, but this is totally fine. This is what we do.
Yeah.
But that's her choice to not eat meat, which is totally fine. And a lot of support, which sort of boosts of morale and just fires me up even more to share it even further and get more people that are really want to learn it.
Yep.
For the right reasons. Spread that sort of information and education. Yeah.
Fantastic. And did you notice any any uptick in inquiries or, followings of your Facebook pages or social media and stuff like that after the article and stuff?
Yeah, I had a lot more emails coming through.
Nice.
From my website.
Yep.
Yeah, so obviously people seeing that the name and maybe Googling it.
Yep.
Jumping on there, getting in touch, a fair few more coaching sessions. And gift certificates for Christmas and stuff like that, or birthdays. Yeah. Getting some – I'm getting people from South Brisbane travel up here. I had two blokes yesterday in here from south of Brizzy. They travelled out 2 hours just to get here.
That's unreal. Says a lot, mate. Says a lot.
Yeah, yeah, and they were just – they were frothing when they left. Well, they're frothing when they're here. They're frothing before they got here, but yeah, they're just loving it.
And were they new to the sport?
Yeah, they're new. Oh, they've been doing it for a couple of years.
Yeah, okay, yep.
But they've only gone out on a couple of hunts.
Yep.
So Yeah, they just coming in to get their bows tuned up, and they actually bought some arrows off us, our arrows, the provider series.
Nice.
So we spined them up to what they were, to what their poundage and draw lengths are, because what they were using was a bit too stiff.
Yep.
And yeah, they were stoked. They were grouping really nice, and yeah.
That's awesome. And yeah, so like you said before, you've got the option to actually fling some arrows at your range. That's got to make a big difference too, hasn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sure. Like as opposed to just going to a retail shop where you can't actually do that. You know, I've been to various ones in the past where, okay, you touch and feel and that sort of stuff. Obviously, they're not going to let you draw a bow unless it's under strict supervision or whatever, and in some cases not at all, especially if you've got no arrow to put on the string in case of draw firing. But to have a range there where either, you know, people can come and hire it, or, you know, like you said, you do your coaching or you do your social shoots and that sort of stuff. But even to be able to walk in, even if they, like you said, these guys, they had their own gear, but you know, you can help them tweak it and tune it and you know, tighten up their outcomes for them. That's, that's one of the biggest things I think that's going, is that, if, you know, for you and your business, that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. You're not just tuning the bow and they're leaving from there and they got to sort of shoot it in themselves at home or and do the final adjustments, hey.
Yeah, that's it. And how – yeah. Look, how did you go having a conversation back when you decided within yourself that this was something you wanted to do, and you went to the missus and you went, hey, doll, I want to open up a shop and shoot shit. how did that conversation go, mate?
Well, my wife is super, super supportive of whatever I do, so I'm quite lucky there. But it wasn't really a concern or an issue between us. She was just like, yeah, like if this is what you want to do, like bloody oath, go for it.
Yep.
Like why not? We've worked hard for the last 15 years. We set ourselves up really, really well. And, it wasn't really too big of a sort of, what would you call that?
Like a leap of faith?
Leap of faith? I guess you could call it. But yeah, it's taken, I feel like it's taken a little while to sort of get going, but now it's got some traction and it's just momentum. Ripping,
hey? Yeah, it's rolling, snowballing. It's ripping, yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, it's cool. If you don't mind me asking, what were you doing beforehand?
Yeah, gas fitter plumber.
Yeah, nice.
Right. So mainly gas fitting.
Yep.
I've still got that business running.
Yep.
First line. And we just niched into the caravans.
Yep.
So we don't do really anything but brand new caravans. So we just got a basic storage of parts for that, and yeah, that's just ticking over, which is good.
And the best thing, I suppose, is you can manage both. The far ahead and the gas fitting stuff to your own timetable and schedule and fit it in around what you want. That's a really good setup.
Yeah, it's quite awesome. Like I don't think I'd be able to do it if I was running it the way I was 5+ years ago before I sort of niched into that caravan market.
Yep.
I was just holding way too many different bits and pieces and driving left, right and centre.
I was going to say, do people come to you or do you go to them, or how does that roll for you?
It's all mobile. Yep. Yeah, so we just go to the manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a few of the biggest Sunny Coast manufacturers here.
Oh, fantastic. Build
caravans.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. So we go to their sheds.
Yep.
Get the gas out, certify it, and we keep all of our stock at our other shed down in Moffat Beach, and
yep,
it seems to work nice and cruisy. Hey,
That's awesome. We would like to interrupt this episode of the Hunting Republic podcast to bring you a word from our sponsor. as regular listeners of the podcast would know, I own the company of Brackenware along with two of my very good friends. What is Brackenware? Brackenware is premium outdoor hunting apparel. Our mission statement says we exist to optimize your performance by outfitting you with premium technical outdoor and hunting apparel. We have deliberately hand-chosen advanced technical fabrics based on durability, weight, and quietness. Our pattern has been inspired by nature's camouflage experts and custom designed with every component and feature rigorously tested in the field by experienced hunters to ensure the precise fit, comfort, durability, and performance you demand from premium technical gear. Research has been ongoing and development has been ongoing since 2012. And today's Brackenware reflects our commitment to giving you nothing but the best. Brackenware is premium technical gear designed, used, and trusted by experienced hunters the world over. You can find us at www.brackenware.com, BrakenWear.com, and you can find us on all of the socials. So yeah. Tell me about your gear, mate. What do you shoot?
I'm shooting the Expedition X-Lite 33.
Yep.
I got that. When did I get that? Start of the year. Yeah, start of this year.
Yep.
I love it. Maybe it's a bit too light to sort of keep training with, because
mm-hmm.
I held my mate's bow. He's got a prime, and I picked his up, and I was like, far out. I couldn't hold up for as long as I could with my X-Lite.
Yep.
So I was like, oh, okay. I might have to start sort of doing a bit more heavier weights on like static holds, so yep. I can at least shoot a heavier bow.
Yeah.
But this thing's it's pretty awesome. It shoots, what have I got, a 520 grain arrow provider shaft, which is ours.
Yep.
I run a 125, either a trizot, or just like a fixed two blade.
Yep.
And that's coming, I think it shoots, flings them out at about 275 feet per second.
Yes, nice slouch.
29.5-inch draw.
No need to brag, mate. Easy. Mine's 26.5.
And what have I got? I've just got I use an index finger release.
Yep.
Scott one.
Yep.
What else have we got?
So how do you go? Like, what's your setup? You're going out bow quiver, I assume, or do you use the quiverizer?
I use the quiverizer.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Most of my hunting is I hunt on smaller blocks. Like I haven't done many hunts. I did a pig hunt up north on a 65,000 acre block, but
just a little one.
Like it's yeah, that was the biggest one I've ever hunted. But usually they're like within that 2,000 acres.
Yep.
And so I'm not doing a whole heap of trekking, and yep. I haven't really done any sort of like multiple night hunts.
Yep.
But I find it it's not too bad to sort of drag through the bush. It's a 33-inch axle to axle, and it's quite large in circumference, but it doesn't seem to get in the way, and it's pretty handy to sort of like push branches out of the way as well.
Mm.
The quiverizer on the front,
yep,
and it actually did sort of half save a bit of a gouging from a boar up on that recent trip too. I got charged, and I sort of just pushed that out towards its face, and it held up and just ran off.
That's not a bad thing.
Yeah, so just that, yeah.
And backpack wise, do you hunt with like a larger pack, a smaller pack? You know, do you run a belt with knives off it? What have you got there, mate?
I've got a 30-liter pack.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Hunter's Element pack. I'm probably due for another one. Hey, a new backpack. Had that for quite a while. So 35 liter. I've got I run the Vivo barefoot
mm-hmm.
shoes, the boots. So I can feel pretty much every twig and stone underneath my foot, which is pretty handy.
Yep.
What else have I got in there? I got like a little field knife kit that I run. I was using the Gerber gut hook and that little drop knife kit, and then my mate Darren made me up a set of knives, just some lightweight ones with like a gut hook, a drop point, and a skinning knife in it. So I'm running that now.
Yeah, nice.
Which is, they're actually pretty cool. They're super light. What else? I just use a 3-liter bladder in there.
Bag. You carry binos?
Binos. I've got the Bushnell Engage. They're 10 by 42s.
Yep.
And the Bushnell rangefinder, the Engage rangefinder. What else we got in there? I think I need some new camo wear, actually, Luke.
We'll talk after the record button stops, mate.
for sure. I keep a little steel in my bag as well.
Yeah, good idea. Yeah, so,
and then just a spare release aid.
Yep.
Just in case that one 100% goes salty.
It's one of my perennial worries, and I've got an older. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think the release aid I've got is, or that I use all the time, is probably pushing. It'll be at least 15 years old. It's a Scott True. Yeah, it's a True Ball. Sorry, and I just love it. You know, I've used it for that long. It's like a part of me almost when I'm out hunting. But you know, I've always got another one in my pack somewhere. Because it's one of those things. If you take it off or lose it or leave it back at camp or whatever, you know, either myself or whoever I'm hunting with or something like that. I just think it's always a good idea to have a spare release aid.
Mm, for sure. Did you say that was an Index?
Yeah, mate. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And is that wouldn't have the auto closing jaws?
No. I used to run one, actually. I got one years ago. I got a Fathom Green Tree, actually. And I can't remember what brand it was, but it had a little button in between the jaws, and you'd clip it straight onto the string, not onto a D-loop. And when you clip it on the string, it'd depress this button and the jaws would clip shut. And I was living in Gold Coast or Brizzy. I can't remember where I was shooting. It must have been living at the Gold Coast and I was shooting at Renegade. And I was out there doing some practice for an upcoming Cape trip, and within 5 minutes, this thing had failed, like not 5 minutes, but in the space of a 5 minute period, this thing had failed on me twice and I punched myself in the nose twice and lost one of those arrows into the back of the range somewhere. Who knows where the hell it went, but I just threw the thing into the scrub and left it there.
Yeah.
So it was a sour experience. And like I'd shot it for a fair while. I'd owned it for a fair while. But it just decided to give up the ghost. The sear inside must have worn too much for it to stay locked closed or whatever. And it just went, nah, I'm done. I'm worn out and I'm not hanging on anymore. And, yeah, the first time I thought it was me. The second time I'm like, no, that was not me. And I just said a few descript words and hurled the thing into the scrubs. Yeah, but that's like the actual, you know, the mechanism activating in the True Balls, you know, it can't do that. It's locked and loaded. It's bulletproof as far as that's concerned. So that's why I went with them many years ago. It's probably directly after I threw this thing in scrub, actually. I probably went straight online or somewhere and bought that. I can't remember, to be honest.
Yeah.
What was my other question going to be? So is most of your hunting reasonably local to you?
Not most of it. Hey, I have traveled a fair bit for the hunting.
Yep.
I don't have that many sort of blocks close by.
Yep.
We mainly head down to New South Wales for goats and fallow.
Yep.
Got a mate down at near Jindy that has a decent block.
Nice.
We're there this year for the rut. That was good fun. I got like a young yearling sort of just about to become a spiker. That was on the first day. So we had some good meat that we all shared. There was about 10 of us at the homestead. And
I was going to say it would have been good chewing.
Oh, mate, it was amazing. Probably one of the better deers I've ate for sure.
Yep.
So we had that for the rest of the trip, which was epic. Had my wife and my three kids down there with us. And
oh, wow.
It was such a good trip. And then there was a heap of them croaking, but we sort of just couldn't sort of get into them that easy. They were full high alert. Hey, they weren't fully rutting.
Yep.
I think it was a little bit late that we got there.
Yep.
They just quietened off a little bit. And then literally, I think it was the last day I was there, we're walking out and we're just trudging back home, pretty heavy footed. And I just seen some movement in the corner of my eye. I was like, oh, boys, get down. And we just saw, it was a young one. Wasn't nothing to brag about, but it was my first one with some antlers on it anyway.
Yep.
And then my mate just did a couple of mews. He was at 45 metres. I just drew back and it just kept coming closer and closer and closer. He had about five does with him, so he was doing pretty good. And he walked all the way into 8 metres before he stopped and, yeah, sent one straight down through the sternum.
Beautiful.
That was a good feeling for all of us to sort of finally get one on that last day. And then what else we got around here? We're actually just moving out to Stony Creek.
Oh, beautiful.
The 5th of December on, well, 52 acres, but got a couple of neighbours either side with a fair bit more.
Mm.
And that's just good red deer country. So, pretty exciting about that. It's mainly just a bush block where we're living. It's got a 1950s dairy homestead on it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's quite nice. We're just going to spend a few weeks doing that up and hopefully being there for Chrissy. So I'm sure I'll get a bit more access out that way, meeting all the locals and getting into that community, which would be pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but I do enjoy going out to other people's properties, like in different spots, like going back to what we were saying about where animals are sort of living and their habitat around what they're feeding on and sort of taking, it can be the same breed of animal or the same type of deer, but they're obviously feeding on different things in different areas. So you're getting different types of minerals and vitamins and proteins and fats out of different areas.
Yep.
So I find that pretty enjoyable, new terrain and
I love love hunting a new bull.
It's so good. There's awesome. Nothing better, hey.
I mean even place that I go out to central Queensland here, and it was only my last trip I was out there with Brady, where we sort of, you know, I'm always trying to, I mean, think we all do it when we hunt, we're always trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together. Food, water, sleep, you know, travel, you know, what's the equation that can put me in the right place at the right time with those elements, and try and factor in the answer to, you know, find the game, obviously, at the time of day that you're hunting or when the best time of day is or whatever. But I think the property's 7,000 acres or hectares. I think it's hectares because I know Chris always says, what does he say? Not poor people, not something else. It's only people with small farms talking acres or something like that anyway. Because it makes it sound bigger, right? But anyway, it's a bloody big property, you know, and you can hunt there 3 or 4 days in a row and walk miles and never walk the same place. But we headed out to this creek, and I'd hunted a couple of k's of this creek probably 18 months before, but for the most part we'd hunted different parts of the property on the other occasions we've been out there. But you know, I was doing the math in my head and thinking about where I'd seen pigs and where I'd seen water and what I knew of the lie of the land and the water, you know, courses and stuff like that. And I just said, let's go and hunt this creek this afternoon, thinking about what we saw, where we saw pigs yesterday and this morning and this afternoon or whatever else and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, Brady had a couple of shots and where the pigs ran to after that and all that sort of thing. I went, I reckon they've got to be out on this creek somewhere. So I'd hunted it, yeah, like I said, about maybe 18 months before. Yeah, 12, 18 months. And only walked a few Ks, but we had a lot more time in the afternoon when we were at there last, and we probably walked about 4 or 5 clicks on this creek, and we sure enough came across pigs, and then we followed them for a couple of Ks, and Brady whacked a couple, which was really good. But I guess what I'm saying is there's still 5 or 6 Ks of that creek that I haven't walked yet, you know what I mean? So even in since that trip and being out, having been out to this property heaps of times, I still haven't explored this area and that, you know, that terrain. And you know, I've been thinking about it since I was out there last, thinking I know exactly where I want to go on the first morning I'm there and exactly where I want to walk to explore all this new country and see what's there, you know, and I'm really keen to get out and do it.
Yeah, that's exciting, hey. When you can go back and sort of reflect on it and yeah, put those pieces into together and get all G'd up for the next one.
Oh, and I think it's part of the that innate thing you start to tune into when you start hunting and become a hunter. You start to, you know, go to the either properties you've been to before or, you know, like I said, new places with new challenges, and you're going food, you know, water, sleep, travel, where are they? When might they be there? What might they be? You know, obviously you start seeing sign and you go, okay, well, you know, talk to the owner, we know there's some pigs or goats or deer or and or both or all or whatever. And you start to sort of put that pattern together and you build that picture. And it's that constant shifting of that equation. You know, some days or some seasons you get feed in different places and, you know, water in different places and stuff like that, and it changes that equation. So each time you go out there, it's different, you know. And I've noticed that at this property as the property owner has bought the place a few years ago, and he's been slowly changing it over from a cattle property to a cotton property, and you know, still running sorghum and wheat and stuff like that in different places, where it's altered the habits and the movements of the pigs, you know. And then even to the point where, like again, this time last year before I was due to go traveling, I thought, I'm going to rip out there. It's coming towards the end of winter. It's been bloody dry. I know the vast majority of water will be dried up. There'll be select water holes that I'll be able to target, blah, blah, blah. The day before I went out there, it rained, you know, so I'm going, bloody hell, you know, just my luck. But that then landing out there and going, okay, it's rained yesterday. It actually rained that morning when I was heading out, you know, walking out to hunt, and then trying to manage that equation to go, okay, it's raining, it's rained, what might be happening here, where might I see them, what might I do, you know, it's a challenge every time.
Yeah, it's never the same, hey.
No. And even then, yeah. you sort of go, oh, they'll be here, or they'll probably be there, and then you might be heading towards a particular, you know, water hole or something, and you might come across them 300 meters before you get there, and you go, what the hell are they doing here? You know, why are they lying under that tree? There's nothing there. There's no feed. There's no wood. Like, what the hell, you lazy bastards, you know? I mean, that happened to us last time. Like, we were out there and walked, not a kilometre, but good 500, 600, 800 metres across this paddock to where I know it's a fairly shallow lagoon is, and it's a big C-shape lagoon, and it runs for probably be good 600, 700, 800 metres itself, and it's up to 50 meters across in some points. But at the eastern end of it, you can sort of walk around it or walk across it where it's very shallow or a little bit muddy, and then you can cut across, if you like, the sea. You know, you don't have to walk all the way around the diameter, what's the word, the radius of the sea. You can walk across the middle. So as we're headed across there, there's some water holes out to the east that I hadn't seen before. I hadn't seen water in them, so I said, oh, we'll go out and we have a look around this for some sign. It might tell us, or there might be a pig line in the mud there or whatever. Nothing there, so we sort of kept walking in a straight line to sort of, if you imagine, going across to the top of the C-shape. And we walked for a good K and a half, saw some good signs, saw some bloody big prints, and no pigs. It's like, oh, bugger this. Okay, well, it was getting late in the day or late in the morning, so we need to head back for some lunch. So I said, we'll head back. And as we're walking back, lying unseen to us on the waterhole where we'd missed it in the shade was this whopping great big boar of about 80 kilos, 90 kilos, whatever it was. And again, it's just like, well, how did I miss that? I was missed that because I was distracted by the water out here that was different to last time. So the equation had changed and I hadn't, you know, I'd neglected that as an oversight and I hadn't factored that into the equation. I should still be keeping an eye over there. I was more distracted and excited by what I'd seen somewhere else. It's like, ah, you son of a bitch. But anyway, you know, one of those, you always learn something new every time you go out.
Yeah, fully. Yeah. You can't always win, hey.
Oh, mate, I think if hunters had a dollar for every time they'd walked in the bush and walked a mile and not got something, you know, we'd be filthy rich.
You yeah, know. Fully.
I know. Yeah. It's just the way it goes. So what are your future plans for the business, mate? What have you got on the cards for that?
Yeah, so I really just want to focus a lot more into this course and really get that pumping.
Yep.
Just with how much interest it has sort of gathered over the last couple of months. Deliver that on Fridays, maybe even open up another time slot during the week. So it's an 8-week course. We run it over each school term, so four times a year.
Yeah, nice.
School terms are usually like 10 weeks, so it's one week either side of that term in the middle. Getting a lot more. I like educating the guys that really want to learn it for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a passion for getting out there doing what we love really. And what other plans we got for this joint? I was actually sort of thinking about making it a 24/7 sort of facility for members.
Yeah, right.
So they can come in, shoot down on the range, come in when they want to sort of practice, because like being in suburbia on the coast, a lot of the guys that do come in here, they've got very short distances at home,
because
they either live on like 250 square meter blocks.
Yeah.
They've got like no backyard or not even any side access to shoot down the side of their house, or if they do, they're like, oh, I just don't feel comfortable because I'm learning and I don't know where this arrow is going to go. It could go through that fence into someone else's yard. So I guess it's, having somewhere for them to come in, and I guess expanding the hours in which they can come in so they can, sort of practice a lot more, and I guess that way they can meet a lot more people that are doing it and create some mates while they're here and sort of plan their own hunting trips.
Mm, for sure.
Within this space.
Yep.
I had a couple of guys that have been coming in here for the last year or so, and they just went on their first hunt 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they both come back. One got a good billy, cracking billy, better than any of mine that I've ever got.
Nice.
That was his first goat. And then they got two nannies for the table.
Fantastic.
And they just come back so wrapped, had the sickest time, and they I'm pretty sure they met through this place, and every time they're coming in they're talking about it and what they're gonna do, and I gave them a number of this bloke that they can talk to and see if they can get onto his property. And
yeah, nice.
They could, and it's a great property, heaps of deer down there, and fair few goats. But when he sent me the photo of the billy, I was like, man, I've never even seen a billy that size there. Yeah. I was like,
get out and cool, don't come back.
So I guess just to see more of that, I would love.
Yeah.
If I can build this place to see more of that, yep. and that would just fill my heart even more.
Yeah, mate, I appreciate that wholly. Back when I was running the forums in 20 plus years ago now, and there were young guys on the forum then, and nowadays they're, you know, in their 30s with kids of their own and still hunting and taking their kids out, and their kids are starting to you know, follow in dad's footsteps. But, you know, having seen these lads pick up the bow when they were 12 and 13 and jump on the forums and want to be learning more and, you know, and just full of enthusiasm and stuff, and then seeing them, you know, all these years later and throughout the time as well, you know, still out there doing it and loving it and the passion there, you know, it really is an awesome thing to be able to witness, you know. And it's, yeah, like you said, it's rewarding in that sense, you know. And yeah, I didn't go out and do it for them. They had to obviously do all their own hard work, but you know, to a bit of an extent back in the day when facilitating the access to people, places, information and knowledge, you know, and advice and stuff was the role, I suppose, that the forums had back then. It was you know, something really awesome to be able to witness, you know.
Yeah. That was through a Facebook forum that you created?
No, back in 2000, I'm stretching my memory here, I'll have to look up my Facebook page. I used to run forums. I still do. They're still there. They're just very quiet these days. And through iterations of issues over the years, a few things have changed. But so the Bowhunters Group of Australia were the forum's name, and we actually were the first ever online presence of bow hunting forums in Australia. And they, after about 10 years, we were cranking about 10 million hits a month on the forums. And
whoa.
Yeah, mate, it was absolutely,
that's huge.
It was going off. So like I said before, you know, talk about Adam, you know, Greentree, you know, he was one of the fellow administrators. So I started the group and I said, hey, I need someone to help me run it. Are you keen? And if you've ever seen or anyone, you know, most people know Adam or of Adam, love him or hate him, but his enthusiasm for bow hunting is up there with the likes of, you know, Steve Irwin, you know, like I've for years now said, hey, Adam's the Steve Irwin of bow hunting, you know, the passion that he exudes for the sport and the extroverted nature that he has, you know, it's just like him and Steve for their allotted passions were peas in a pod. But yeah, so I saw that and went, dude, you know, you'd be great for this. So are you keen to help? And then there was a guy, an elderly gentleman now, but a really, really, really good bowyer on the sunny coast there. He lived up at Mullaney called Glenn Newell. And I asked him if he was interested in helping out as well. So the three of us kicked it off sort of as the administrators, and it grew and grew and grew because basically there was nothing online back then for bow hunters in Australia. There was no, you know, decent online information about bow hunting, about animals. And I was not new to the sport, but I was thirsty for more information and learning. And when I didn't find any, I just went, well, bugger it, I'm going to start this show myself. And I had to learn about coding and web design and all that sort of stuff, and she kicked off from there. And then, you know, as it grew, it's just more and more people from all around the country and the world. Pedro Impuro from over in Spain, for example, you know, he was on the forums and he wrote for a magazine that we published as well. And, you know, you see these younger kids come on. I was talking about before, you know, 12, 13 year old lads, and across the course of, you know, the time that you've known them, see them grow into the sport, tick off boxes and achievements and goals and that sort of thing. Just amazing opportunity. And there's dozens of these guys, you know, that I'm still in contact with and still talk to and best friends with and that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's been like yourself with the shop in business, you know, these guys and girls will come in, you'll do your courses and stuff. But like you said, you've made good mates out of it. And yeah. you know, they'll be mates, you know, going forward. And that's one of the coolest aspects of the whole thing, you know, the community, the mateship, the camaraderie and all that sort of stuff. And even some guys now don't bow hunt anymore, you know, so they've moved either onto something else or they've just decided that, you know, life's just taken them in different directions, be that career wise, family wise, whatever. But, you know, the beauty of social media is it's easy to keep in touch and, you know, say good day every now and then and how you're doing and what's happening and that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's really been a cool journey so far.
Yeah, that's massive. That's cool.
Yeah, so the older we get, the better we were. I don't know. Don't ask me where that came from. So if you were to, you know, someone's to come in to your shop, come into your business or to reach out to you, what would be your primary piece of go-to advice for them? They're interested in hunting. They've heard about this bow hunting stuff. They don't want to bother getting a rifle. That sounds like too much hard work to them. But they're really keen. What would be your bit of advice to them?
Yeah, for sure. So if they're super keen to get into it, I'd recommend a coaching session to book in. We can go through where they're at, what they're sort of wanting out of their bow hunting, mm-hmm. And move from there. I find most people have sort of a little bit different needs, or they're sort of expecting something different out of it. But yeah, they throw us an email through the website or on Instagram. Just have a chat and get to know you, and come in, check out the space, see if it's something for you, and I can set them up with a full bow setup, arrows, everything they need, anything from entry level to whatever they want to sort of spend. If they just reach out and book in a session is probably the best option for them.
And that's, I think, mate, to be honest, that's the thing that, you know, when I saw you, your profiles and that for your business and stuff for Farahead Bow Hunting, going back a little ways now, and I did a bit of, you know, clicking the links and following through to your website and stuff like that. I think personally I went, this is something really good in a really good space, and, you know, to provide the option and the access. And that's what I was getting to before, I suppose, with the ability to have the fact you've got a range there too, you know, like people can come in and try before they buy. And that's a massive tick in the box, because, you know, you can't do that with a lot of things that, particularly in the bow space, you know, bows are very custom fit. They have to be, or it's not going to work for you as well as it could or as well as it should. And the responsibility lies with the informed person, the business owner, to make sure that the gear's right for the person. But the ability for them to come in and say, hey, we've heard about this, we wouldn't mind, can we have a bit of a try before we buy, you know, and that sort of thing is an amazing opportunity. It's very seldom that people don't get the bug, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, how many times, I bet, you know, you've no doubt heard it countless times since you've been doing this, where people come in, oh, you know, I was at a school camp and we shot these fiberglass bows and it was so much fun, you know, or I was in Cubs and Scouts and stuff like that, and, you know, we did some archery once and, oh, it was great, you know. Like, there's so many people who can reflect back on that and those sorts of opportunities and experiences and go, I'm really keen to try that again. You know, so they've had that exposure to it somewhere. Almost everybody has. And then they come in and they go, oh, I'm really keen now, and can you help me out? And, you know, your ability to be there and go, yeah, cool, what are you interested in? Archery, hunting, bit of both, or, you know, what's your ideals here, you know? It's really cool. Sure. Really cool.
And then I guess, like, yeah, like you said, setting them up with a bow that in here, even if it's not theirs, to the right draw length, getting them to feel comfortable within the bow before they're shooting it, And you find that they actually enjoy it more.
100%.
Because they're set up the right way.
Yep.
And they can leave feeling like, oh, that's actually not as daunting as I thought, shooting a compound bow.
Yep.
Yep.
It's yeah, and it's when I suppose I guess I can try and understand it's a bit hard because I've been around bows my entire life, but you know, you look at what a bow looks like these days and you go, what the hell is that? It could be daunting, you know, it could be quite daunting to look at a compound bow of 2024 and go, what on earth is happening with this thing? Where do I even start to look at, you know?
And the draw cycles on them, they're all different. They're not just a casual like recurve where it's you're just building pressure on it.
That's right.
You've got, and most people get sort of slapped on the arm as well, which might sort of make them put it down and sort of not want to go back to it. And so many different factors. But if they can sort of enjoy it the first time and get a good feeling from the first time, and they're more likely to keep going and pursue what they sort of really want to do.
So, mate, we've been chatting for about an hour and a quarter, but before we wrap it up, I want to know what has been your favourite hunting experience so far?
Favourite hunting experience? For some reason, it's probably my most recent one up north in North Queensland with Matt Caleb and Sam. We went, that was my first proper like big boar hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So heading up there, the just being somewhere that was just completely isolated from any sort of like civilization. It was 65,000 acres.
Yep.
We didn't see a vehicle or another human for like 5 days. We camped on this boar drain, which is this boar that they tapped into like 150 years ago. And it's hundreds of litres of water coming out the ground a second.
Wow.
Per minute, sorry.
Uh-huh.
It's just flowing out and it travels for about 20 kilometres.
Yep.
And this ecosystem, it's got freshwater crocodiles. The bird life is amazing. Everything's just thriving. But at the same time, it's so freaking hot and dry.
Yep.
So being up there, walking that boar, it was quite scary
because
you just never know when you're going to stumble across a pig. Because you think you can see them because they're so black. You're just looking for that really dark spot under pandanus leaves, behind logs.
Yep.
And then next minute, it's just right in front of you. Like you could be like 3 meters from one.
Yep.
And your heart's just like, oh, this is hectic. and I was like, Caleb, what do you do? Like, when you get that close and you just stumble across one, are you walking back? Because I'll just walk back and I'm not shooting one from that close. That's so scary. And he's like, nah, man. Yeah, you just smash them.
Just pump it. Just pump it.
A few meters away.
That's it.
Just pump it, mate.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, I don't know, man. And the first pig that I shot up there, walk this dry creek bed, and I was like, all right, sweet, he's in there, he's about 15 meters away, I can see the pad that he's running in and out of.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just go above it. I drew back and he's sort of picking up that something was wrong. I was like, all right, sweet. I let the shot off on him and it's just hit a little bit high and it's gone double lung. And he's popped up, just ran out of his bed, and he made it about 5-6 meters and just looked straight at me. I was like, are you kidding me? And he's sort of half trotted up to me I didn't move. I was just from all the movies and stuff that you're watching. It's like, just don't move. They can, they're running at you. They might just run past you because they might think you're a tree. But he definitely knew I was something else. He ran up to me about 3 meters, didn't move, and then we were sort of just staring off for a bit. And then he just turns his head and starts walking away. I was like, oh, man, thank God. And then he just stops again and turns around, looks at me. I was like, nah, you're kidding me, and just charges me. And I just put my bow down and sort of took a couple of steps back. And I don't know if my quiverizer hit him on the nose or not, but he turned and sort of ran, and he dropped within 60, 80 meters after that. But that was my first pick of the trip, and that sort of set it from there. I was like, Caleb, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know if I want to be walking this by myself anymore.
And that's the clip that interested parties can see on your social media. Is that right?
Yeah. So yeah. I just posted one on the other day on Instagram. Yep. Again, I think it could be on my it's on my YouTube as well.
Yep.
It's a pretty hairy moment, but I think that's the one that comes to mind the most, maybe because it's so recent.
Yep.
But that one down in Jindy was amazing, just with all the family down there.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Four of my good mates and two of their partners.
Yeah.
There's like 10 of us down there staying in this homestead, having the fire on all day because it was freezing, and getting that deer on the first day, bringing it back, and the kids were just cheering, and they're just talking about, oh, because it's a really nice, pretty fallow, little spotty thing.
Yep.
Really light color. And my daughter, she just loves it, loves bow hunting and loves animals and all the different types of animals. And she's like, oh, can this skin go in my room, Dad? Can this go in my room? And
nice.
She helped me skin it. She's 7 years old. And she actually said yesterday or the day before, I was leaving to go do a couple of vans, some gas fitting. She's like, oh, what are you doing today, Dad? I was like, oh, I'm heading off gas fitting today. She's like, oh, okay. She's like, oh, can you just do the bow hunting? I was like, oh, why is that? She's like, oh, I'd just rather you do the bow hunting business.
Might have to speak to Mummy about that.
I was like, yeah, I know. I get it.
Me too.
Yeah. But yeah, having all the family and really good close mates down there and enjoying that whole hunt and getting some steps under our belts and just having a good time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and Jindy was amazing.
Yeah.
No,
it's something like my eldest daughter's she'll be 10 in January. And I said to her a bit earlier this year, I said, oh, I'll take you out when you're 10, you know, and go, because I don't have access to anywhere that doesn't have pigs at the moment. Like I don't have access to a deer or a goat property and that I could just go to, you know. And, you know, so the option to go out and, you know, target some, well, let's just say for the most part, less aggressive species isn't something that I can do. So I'm, you know, my youngest daughter's only 6, and it's like, well, I'm not too keen to take you after pigs. And even, you know, some people out there will say 10's too young, but, you know, I said to her, when you're 10, when you're double figures, we'll go out. She's 10 in January, as I said, and we're talking about the upcoming school holidays the other day, and my daughter was down the hallway a bit, and our house has got polished wooden floors, so, you know, sound bounces around. And I was talking about the holidays with my wife and that, and I said, oh, you know, oh, I might take Matilda out to Chris's and go hunting. And she's like, you're going to take me hunting? You're going to take me hunting? You know, when? I was going, I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to Mummy.
You know? You can't hide anything from me.
But we've got a little target set up in the backyard here. And I've got, actually, it's my first ever fiberglass recurve bow. And, sorry, a little longbow technically. And I've also got a little self bow that I made for my son many years ago. And the girls have been out and shooting those and whatnot and absolutely loving it. But I've also got a little, it's an old model now, but it was pretty much back in the day one of the best ever kids' bows you could buy. It's called a Browning Micro Midas. I think it was Micro Midas 3. And it's got like, I think it's about 10 inches of adjustable draw length on it and goes from about 18 pound up to about 40 or 45 pound or something like that. Phenomenal bow for juniors to use because you can buy it when they're, you know, like my son was 10 or 12 and then use it for a good number of years. Get really good value for money out of it. So I've still got that. And I was thinking the other day I'll pull that out and grab some arrows and teach my oldest daughter how to use that as well. So not necessarily with the intention of hunting pigs, but, you know, we'll go out there, I'll take the target block out and we can shoot some arrows and then you can come and sit quietly and watch daddy shoot the pigs, hopefully, and that sort of thing. But that enthusiasm that the kids have for it, mate, it's pretty raw, isn't it?
It is, man. Yeah. Yeah.
And I can remember, you know, having discussions with them as well, and the same with my young fellow when I first took him out and whatnot about the process. And, you know, we're not trying to hurt the animal. You know, this is why we're doing it. This is what it's all about. And our goals are to do it, you know, as humanely as possible and blah, blah, blah. And it's a big distinction, you know, that they understand that.
For sure. I agree. Yeah.
But it's something that I think a lot of kids miss out on, and therefore we see that unfortunate perpetuation of the separation. You know, where does our food actually come from, and what's the best way to go about getting it? But educating our kids, you know, that opportunity gives them that grounding, you know, and helps them appreciate that much, much better, I think. And like you're saying, sharing those experiences, you know, the memories that you make with them, is pretty special, pretty cool hunting memories.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Yeah. Do your kids help you with the processing of the meat and stuff like that you get?
Not yet. Not my young kids. No. Yeah. Usually, yeah. If I do that, it's while I'm out hunting, and you know, the block I go to is 4.5 hours from here. So, You know, it's easier to do that there and then. Excuse me. So no, they haven't had that opportunity yet, but, you know, they see the rest of the process, I suppose, when you get home. With the making of roasts or, you know, cutting up of the different cuts and stuff like that. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all good. So where can people find you? What are your social media tags, handles, nicknames, pseudonyms?
All right. So Instagram, I'm pretty sure it is far_ahead_bowhunting.
Yep.
We have got our Facebook page. It's Far Ahead Bow Hunting. Most of our content is on the Instagram, but I'm pretty sure it does link up to Facebook. Otherwise, you can literally type in Far Ahead Bow Hunting on Google, and that will have all of our website, all of our content and Instagram pages, links, stuff like that through there. That'll pop up for you to go have a look. And all of our courses, coaching, lane hire, our arrows and products are on a website if you want to jump on there and have a look at what we've got to offer.
Fireaheadbowhunting.com. And we've got an email of what I'm looking at here, info@fireaheadbowhunting.com. So if people want to get in touch. Or shoot Mad Harry a DM or a PM, whichever you prefer. via socials, yes. Mate, it's been great chatting with you. Really stoked to have you on and, you know, super excited about what you're doing down there and the opportunity you're providing for people on the sunny coast. And like you said, you know, even guys are coming from a bit further afield, but I think you're working in a really great space and doing some really awesome things for bow hunting, but for hunting in general too, you know, for that public presence and the opportunity and even the, like you said, the media coverage you've gotten with the newspaper article. That's an awesome thing for the sport and for the pastime. And, mate, full kudos to what you're doing and your commitment to it, your your dedication to you know, making that, like I said, a leap of faith and committing your working life, you know, in part at the moment. And, you know, if things go well, then maybe down the track it's a full-time gig for you if you like, you know. But,
sure.
Mate, it's all full credit to you. And I think that the sport and the pastime and all the people that, you know, come into contact with you guys will be far, far better off for it. So, yeah, it's keep doing what you're doing. And, yeah, I really look forward to keeping in touch and watching it all play out. And, yeah, if there's anything that that we can help with or that I can help with at all, yeah, feel free, hit me up and whatever else and reach out. And the same, I think, anybody listening is always keen to help people who are invested in the pastime. So no doubt that the support and the encouragement will be all positive, and you'll go from here to bigger and better and bigger and better.
Yeah. Thanks, Luke. I really appreciate that. Having me on, and yeah, let me share what I've been doing here on the sunny coast.
Beautiful and, sunny Queensland. Yeah,
can't wait to see any of the guys that are super keen at getting into it or hear this. Please reach out, and here to help in any way possible. Hey,
yeah, that's it, guys. Get behind these guys down there, and let's help them help us. You know, the thing I've said for years, many people have heard, the bigger the pie, the bigger the slice for everybody. You know, that's the hunters across the board, not just businesses. You know, it's the better we make things for all of us, the better it is for everybody, and the more we can enjoy what we do. So.
Sure.
Get on board, reach out, give them a follow, give them a like, you know, all that sort of stuff. Share their content, and it'll absolutely across the board, you know, help everyone through that ripple effect. All right, thanks, Harry, mate. Great talking to you, and we'll catch up again soon, eh?
Cheers, Luke. Appreciate it, man.
Cheers. Bye. Well, there you have it, team. Another episode in the bag. Hey, that was a really good chat, and I really bloody enjoyed that talk with Harrison. Yeah, it was a good coverage, muscle rehab and back issues to health, nutrition, and you know, copping flack from vegans on Facebook. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I thought we, I don't know, it was just a really good chat with a guy who's obviously sharing his passion for the sport and really invested in helping others buy into that passion and to get involved in a sport that obviously is something that means a lot to him. And it's just great to see the quality of people that we do have around our sport. It really does speak volumes for what it is we do and what we can stand for. And what we can encourage others to be as well. So make sure you jump on, give Far Ahead Bow Hunting a follow. Look up Harrison on socials, look up Far Ahead Bow Hunting on socials that he listed. Follow their socials and give them support. You know, small business in this country is the backbone, and it is what we need to get behind and help the little guys and grow what we can, because that's where it really matters the most. So farahedbowhunting.com, and check them out on Instagram and Facebook as well. YouTube too. Harrison mentioned that a couple of times as well. So don't forget to look up the YouTube channel if you like. Please give us a like and a follow too if you enjoy this episode. And please give us any feedback. We always love hearing from you guys. And happy to incorporate, look at, and do... create content wherever we can to appease the masses. We hope you've enjoyed the episode, and we look forward to talking to you again soon. Cheers, guys. Whoa. Before we go, I have to mention, Harrison said, the range is fully council approved, fully insured, all the good stuff, ticking all the boxes. So there you go. Wanted to make sure I put that in just so everybody knows, because we live in a world where, you know, that sort of stuff's important. So there you go, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Have a good one. Catch you again soon.